This is Radio Boston. I'm Shira Springer. We want to begin today with the debates over what it would take to achieve gender equity in the workplace. The Massachusetts House is debating one part of it this hour, an equal pay bill. The bill would require employees to pay men and women equally for comparable work. It clarifies that employers can pay different salaries based on seniority, merit, and other factors related to the job. Full-time working women earn about 78% of what their male counterparts earn, according to the White House. The Senate has already passed its version of the bill, and there's no word yet on whether or not Governor Baker would sign a negotiated version. So that's one part of equity. Behind it is a larger idea, maybe most famously expressed by Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg in her 2013 book, Lean In. Her book argues women must lean in professionally to go headfirst after their career goals. But 3 years on, after focusing on how to lean in, have we overlooked the other side of the coin? In this case, the other partner who needs to lean out. That's the idea posed by Carol Hay, an associate professor of philosophy and director of gender studies at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. She joins me now in the studio. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Dr. Ray Levy. He's a clinical psychologist at the director of the Fatherhood Project at the Massachusetts General Hospital. Welcome, Ray.
Nice to see you. Thank you.
Carol, let's start with you. Tell us, what exactly is leaning out?
Well, I don't think leaning out is any one particular thing. I think leaning out is probably being committed to having certain kinds of conversations with your partner, right? So if you're in a relationship and you're committed to equality in the context of that relationship with your husband and wife, then that's going to require balancing a lot of the responsibilities, a lot of the sort of mundanities of life, right, as well as one's own career goals, right? And leaning out is sort of being committed to making sure that no one partner disproportionately bears the brunt of the mundane domestic stuff, right? The caregiving. This stuff's really important, but at the same time, it's not sexy. It doesn't have a lot of rewards at the end of the day for picking up the groceries, making sure the kids get to their dentist appointments, these sorts of things. So leaning out is really a commitment to making sure that one partner's career doesn't take precedence over the others if, again, you are in this relationship where you're committed to equality. And again, one of the things that feminists have been talking about for an awful long time is that if we're not careful, if we just follow the social scripts that that we have in our society, women are going to end up taking on the brunt of this domestic work, right? So ever since Ariel Levy came up with the term the second shift, right, we've got this idea that women are responsible not just for their own career responsibilities, but also all of the domestic stuff.
Now, Ray, what do you make of the concept of leaning out? Is that how you would look at the situation?
Well, Carol described it in a different way than I read in the opinion piece she wrote. But it's always been the case, I think, that educated parents would ask the question, one of us needs to be responsible for career and for the economic welfare of the family. And one of us needs to have more responsibility for the children. Now, that doesn't have to be the case now. The idea of leaning out or this discussion that Carol's talking about, I'm very supportive of. In fact, I think that's exactly what couples have to do. They have to figure out what works for them. Who is more ambitious? Can they both be ambitious? Where did the sacrifices have to be? Who's more inclined to need to succeed or to have a wonderful professional message to the world and needs to be free? And I'm all for the idea of equality. I think it's a very difficult concept to generalize about. I think it can be different in different couples. And I see that all the time in my work with fathers. I think these days fathers should be celebrated for their involvement in their families. We see it that fathers want to be more active, certainly than my father was and his generation, in family life. And our work at the Fatherhood Project is to help the fathers be involved, understand how important they are, and have the skills to be effective parents.
I want to get to points that you both brought up, but before we do, I want listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you think we need to be talking more about men leaning out? Are you someone who has leaned out? Has your partner leaned out? How do you feel about it? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Now, Ray, you say, you ask, can both members of a relationship be ambitious? And I want to pose that to both of you. Does somebody actually have to lean out? Is it possible in this day and age to have two people in a couple lean in? Start with you, Carol, and then we'll go with you, Ray.
I think you absolutely can, but I think a couple that has both partners pursuing career goals is going to have to be a couple of things. They're going to have to be lucky. They're going to have to be very well paid, and they're still going to have to find themselves making career sacrifices, right? Because I can actually tell you from personal experience. My husband and I, we met because we were hired for the same job. We were both university professors, and that's how we met. Fell in love. Goes from there. He's actually publishing a book about it this fall, if anyone wants to read it. It's called American Philosophy, A Love Story.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So I can say from personal experience, we are both very professionally motivated. And we have a child. We have a daughter. She's turning 4. And if he and I just kind of go along with what we want to do, we find ourselves sort of systematically giving him the space to pursue his career goals and me having not quite as much room. And this is, again, both of us committed to feminism. Like we wrote this op-ed together, right? We work together. And so if we just, if we think that, oh, yeah, if a couple thinks that they can both just be committed to equality and both be committed to their careers and that's it, and don't have these further conversations about leaning in and leaning out at different times, then chances are very good that the man's career is going to take precedence over the woman's. Because again, this is the culture we live in. These are the background social scripts that are informing our decision making, often unconsciously, right? And it starts from a very early age, right? Little girls are given dolls and toy kitchens and told, you know, that they should expect to be mamas, and boys are sort of told that they're going to be astronauts or farmers or whatever it is, and they're not told to expect to have to balance the demands of career with the demands of children. And Ray, I think this is actually why your work is really important, because you're giving a lot of fathers the room to and the skills needed to be able to negotiate this stuff. And I think you're right that even a few generations ago, we weren't doing this.
Ray, what do you say about both having two ambitious members of a couple?
Again, my emphasis is on each couple working out the demands of their life together and possibly their family life. I agree with Carol that there are these scripts that femininity, masculinity are to a large degree socially constructed. But part of maturity, part of growing up, is recognizing that you have choices to make, recognizing who you are and what you aspire to in life. But if there are, you know, dual career couples, there are several ways to work that out.
I want to stop you there, and I want to take a call from Lisa, who is calling from Groton, and she has an unusual situation that she wants to tell us about in her dynamic and her marriage. Lisa, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, thank you. Yes, so the point I wanted to bring up is that my husband makes probably 3 to 4 times as much income as I do, but we both acknowledge that I am the much more ambitious of the two of us. I am an attorney, public defender. I'm also a licensed certified social worker, and I have a lot of ambition in terms of making a difference in public service. And my husband has just been phenomenal in recognizing that even though he makes more money, he does not hold that over my head in terms of equality in our home. And I would actually say that my husband is more the primary parent than I am. And we originally planned to have 2 children, and because of my just the way that I have felt about parenting, we've decided to have 1 child instead. Our daughter's almost 4. So I just think it's always important to not always think about money as the only quality that allows somebody to be, or the aspiration for money to be the sole sort of ambition.
Lisa, I want to put this to Carol. She's in here nodding her head as you say money doesn't need to be the sole ambition or sole goal as you figure things out in a marriage. What do you say to Lisa?
Lisa, I think that's absolutely right. We should probably preface it by saying for a lot of couples, money does have to be the consideration because the ability to lean out, to make the choice to lean out, is a privilege in a sense, right? Many couples are just trying to, you know, get food on the table. And so the discussion that we're having here really does apply really to a sort of very privileged subset of the population. But that said, I think if you find yourself in a situation or in a relationship where you have the kind of freedom to decide whether or not money is the only thing that's, or rather the most important thing in your lives, then yeah, absolutely. Considerations of justice really do have to come into play.
And before we go on here, I'd like to remind everybody that we want to hear from you. Listeners, you can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. We're going to turn now to Peter, who's calling from Belmont. Peter, what do you have to say about this issue of leaning in and leaning out?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to support and underscore the last point that was made, that this idea that we have a choice about whether to lean in or lean out is really quite a privileged one. And I don't think that's the case for most families today. I think most families are simultaneously leaning in and leaning out, and that the real negotiation, especially from a feminist perspective, is how do we ask men to do both, because the assumption is women will do both and men won't. And I'll just listen to the response. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to turn the conversation a little bit to caregiving, and I know this is something you focus on, Ray. It seems that it's a very important part of the equation to be able to value caregiving, or the value given caregiving. How do we do that better? Because it certainly seems like we may not be doing as good a job as we should be or can be doing.
Well, in certain ways, I think we are doing it well. Men are changing. Millennials want to spend more time with their kids, and they value their caregiving. We do a lot of work to help men realize that what they're doing is important. On a social level, I'm less clear on how we make those changes. But on the individual level, I think it's actually happening before our eyes as we speak.
I want to turn to Michael, who is calling from Waylon. Michael, what do you have to say about this issue?
Well, I said to your call person, I felt like I turned on a show from 1987 or something. I remember, feeling all this revolution of, you know, we always wanted to do that. But I take umbrage almost to a couple of points. Men shouldn't be celebrated for participating. We should be chastised for not participating. I've gone completely the other way. Like I said, I'm 57. My wife and I work things out so that, you know, if I was able to get kids to soccer, I got them to soccer. If she was, she was. And we worked it out. Her job was as important as mine. The only time money is important is if between the two of you, you're not making enough. I mean, then you have to make those kind of choices. But those, I find, are money choices. It was nice to hear from Lisa, whose husband makes so much, and she's so driven to do her stuff. That's very lucky. They could do anything they wanted to do. But if she was driven and he wasn't making any and she was doing all the work, then, you know, then you'd just call it something different because he's making less money. So I was just maybe formulating a question while I was waiting, is who now is this more for? I'm wondering what men in American society don't know that it's so important for them to participate. What men don't participate? Who's lagging behind in this? Because I really thought this was a revolution of several decades ago.
Ray, you seem eager to answer that.
Among certain groups of people, really the more educated, this is a revolution of several decades. But unfortunately, lower income fathers are not aware of their value as parents. And unfortunately, what's happening in the United States is that more fathers are educated fathers are spending time with their children, but the lower income fathers are more and more absent. There are 23% of children growing up in homes without fathers. So, as we see in so many indices, the children are losing out in lower income families.
Also, it seems to me this is a pretty deeply entrenched issue, as Michael was saying on the phone. And there may need be a need to redefine what masculinity is in America before there is sort of some significant changes in this area. And Carol, I wonder what you think about the need to redefine this and create perhaps better role models in popular culture and other areas.
Absolutely. And I think we're in the middle of a transition, or whether it's a sort of like incomplete revolution. Feminism is sort of still in process. And I think you're right. We do need more sort of social scripts about what it is to be a man, what it is to be a woman, or what it is to be neither, right? What it is to reject these overly narrow conceptions of gender entirely, right? So in some ways, we're seeing a lot more opportunities to really just sort of question what it is to be a human being, right? We're seeing with this with the trans movement and these sorts of things. But there's a question about how much this actually affects the day-to-day lives of a lot of people. And I think pop culture has a huge role to play in giving people ideas to strive for, or you know, things to try out. But I think it comes into the way we parent our children, right? So I think this is why Ray's work with fathers is so important, right? Because you know, if you have fathers showing their daughters and their sons how to be involved in caregiving, then that sort of gives them a new way to sort of approach the world. And I think we're getting there, and we're certainly better than we were a few generations ago. But there's still a long way to go.
Ray, you have something to add?
Yeah, we're seeing it everywhere. We refer now to masculinities. There are a lot of different ways to be a man. You see sports stars being interviewed holding their children. You see them being interviewed after games and crying without feeling badly about themselves. There's an integration of feminine quality, traditionally feminine qualities, with masculine qualities. More and more men are emotionally available and emotionally expressive, and I think that's all a good sign. It's part of the trend of masculinities instead of one way to be masculine.
Now, Beth is calling from Framingham. Beth, what's your perspective on this issue?
Well, I just wanted to bring up the topic of mental labor, I guess is what I would call it, the kind of who has the knowledge of what's going on in the family. For instance, my husband and I both work full-time, but I'm still the one that is expected to keep track of doctor's appointments and play dates and school schedules. And I was telling the phone screener that sometimes my kids will be with their dad and I'll be at work or I'll be doing something else, and they will call me from the house to say, where is such and such, or dad doesn't know where this is. And I'll say, oh my gosh, your father's right there with you. But just the fact that women, even if they're participating equally in the paid workforce, are expected to kind of know what's going on in the family and maintain those relationships, and that's an extra layer of labor that women oftentimes are responsible for.
I was going to say, Beth seems to be addressing some of the social scripts that you were talking about earlier, Carol.
That's absolutely right. I think one thing that maybe listeners can ask themselves is how often they've heard people refer to fathers babysitting their children, right? Fathers don't babysit, they parent, right? And we would never say that a mother is babysitting her children, right? But we still do that about fathers. And again, so I think that while we've made a lot of progress in at least showing these ideas as a possibility to for our lives, I think it's the, you know, the progress is partial, right? And I think, you know, the idea of the mental labor, the emotional labor being something that goes on, even if there is a sort of formal equality. Again, I think a lot of couples do find that.
I want to take a call from Jeff, who's in the West End. Jeff, what do you have to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of piggyback on Lisa's call from Groton. So my wife and I are both doctors, you know, dual income earners, and my wife makes a lot more money than I do, and she's very aspirational, but I am too. But I'm more of the stay-at-home kind of father, involved with the kids' day-to-day, you know, responsibilities, and I find it very, very hard because I feel this magnetic pull, and to the degree that it's, you know, a biological piece combined with a social construct piece, it's very hard to tear myself away from work. My wife says I do a fantastic job with the kids, and I believe her. I really enjoy it. But it's hard as a man to not sort of orient myself towards that, you know, going out and working and aspirational achievement.
Ray or Carol, do you want to respond to Jeff?
I think this is just a common dilemma in dual career couples. There's no easy solution. This is a man who likes being with his kids and also likes working and finds it difficult to leave. I applaud him for expressing the dilemma, which I think is widespread.
Here's something else I think that we kind of probably add to this discussion, and that's this isn't just a matter of sort of individual social choice. Rather, our choices happen in a larger cultural context. And so one thing that might make it easier for a man who's leaning out, for a man to sort of who sees those professional opportunities go whizzing by when he didn't take them because he was, you know, up taking care of a sick kid or these sorts of things, is to sort of realize that, like, okay, you're on the right side of history here, right? If we are actually are making feminist progress, then that this is what it's going to look like. And so my thought is that it might actually make it easier to make these professional sacrifices on the individual person if they think, okay, well, this is actually a matter of justice, right?
I want to take one more call. Sophia is in Danvers. Sophia, what are your thoughts on leaning in and leaning out?
Hi. So it's not so much on the child care aspect of all of this or the careers. I'm only 22, but my partner and I have been together for 3 years now, and I say partner even though he's my boyfriend because we and a number of my friends have adopted this method too. We want to take the gender out of being together. It's not boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife. It's two partners who are in it to take care of each other and help each other through the world. And it should be an equal give and take and lean in and lean out when you need it. And so we're kind of on our own doing away with these social structures that kind of impede your life with the other person.
So we've just heard from Hannah, who's 22, which prompts me to ask you, Carol, are you optimistic about reaching a place where men can lean out, and sort of what do you see for the future?
I am optimistic, yeah. I think we are at a point where men are starting to see the value in this. I think we're at a point where women are being taken a lot more seriously in the workplace. And you started off the segment with this discussion of pay equality, right? So I think we are really moving in this direction. Am I optimistic that it's going to happen as quickly as I would like it to? No. And so I think it's actually really great to see, you know, to see young adults in their early 20s really committing themselves to equality, and even something as small and as silly as small as what you call yourselves. It might seem like kind of frivolous or not that big a deal, but I think that these sorts of things really do change the way we think about ourselves, about our relationships, and they're really, really important. My favorite feminist philosopher is a woman named Marilyn Frye, and she has this great description of what she thinks oppression is like. And she said oppression is like a birdcage, right? So if you're looking at a bird, and you're wondering why it's sort of sickly and not really, really flourishing, and if you're only really looking very closely at the bird, you'll never really see what's wrong with the bird. But if you step back a little bit, you might see a wire. And then, if you step back a little bit further, you'll see another wire. And if you take a macroscopic picture, you'll see this bird is completely surrounded by wires. Any one of them by themselves wouldn't really be capable of affecting the bird's life prospects. But all together, because they're systematically interconnected, they completely constrain what's possible for the bird. So she says this is what oppression is like. And so that's why, even when we're talking something about as simple as whether we call ourselves husband and wives or partners, that really can be thought of as one wire in the birdcage.
Now, Ray, I want you to look toward the future and tell me what advice you would give to men. We have about 20, 25 seconds here.
Yes. Well, I don't like to be prescriptive. The advice I'd give to men is not based in these ideals of justice and equality, which I think are very difficult to define. I think they're defined by couples on their own. I would say for men, it is important to be an involved father. Child outcomes are better when fathers are involved. And also, I think you have to know yourself and decide what kind of a man you want to be in discussions with your partner or your wife.
I think we'll leave it there. Carol Hay is an associate professor of philosophy and director of gender studies at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. Thank you, Carol, for joining us.
Thank you.
And Ray Levy is a clinical psychologist and the director of the Fatherhood Project at Massachusetts General Hospital. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Shira Springer, and this is Radio Boston.